Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to Harry's.com. Get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code HAMNATION when you check out. By PillPack, a full-service pharmacy that combines personalized service, convenient packaging, and modern technology to make your life easier. Visit PillPack.com/twit to save $20 on vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescriptions. And by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HAMNATION. This is Ham Nation, episode number 224, recorded November 25th, 2015. Hammy Thanksgiving. Hey, good evening, everybody. It is Wednesday, and it's not just any Wednesday. It is the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. If you're watching us here in the U.S. and Canada and this part of the world, if you're all the way around the other side, like in New Zealand or Australia or Japan or wherever, probably not Thanksgiving where you are, but we're thankful that you're here anyway. Because that's just how we are here on Ham Nation. We've got a good show for you tonight. We've got some Show Me Your Shack action from Dale coming up a little bit later. Of course, Amanda will be in the chat room. We have Gordon West out on the West Coast. No coincidence there that his last name is where he lives. How you doing tonight, Gordon?
I am fine. And speaking of Show Me Your Face, look at this. Look what Harry's sent. Harry's, they are so cool. The razors of choice. Next week, it's Pluto, the year of Pluto amateur radio special event. Next week, we'll tell you all about how to work W7P Pluto all over the place. Back to you, Don.
Yeah, and we've got some, Harry's is one of our sponsors tonight. So we've got some cool stuff to show you from Harry's. And I'm looking for something on my desktop. Here it is right here. Something that I need because the next guy that I introduce here, of course, it being the day before Thanksgiving, I thought I would paraphrase this just a little bit and see if you recognize what this is from. All right, fellow babies, and now it's time to go to our live remote man on the scene at the Pinedale Shopping Mall for the big Ham Nation turkey giveaway. So take it away, George Thomas.
As God is my witness, I swear I thought turkeys could fly.
I watched that whole episode today on Hulu. Just classic, classic television from WKRP. How you doing tonight, George? What's going on up in Jackson?
Oh, doing pretty good, Don. You know, last week I stepped out a little early. I did my thing, and I said, okay, I got to go to the transmitter. Boy, we'll tell you how that turned out after a while.
It's always fun to hear war stories from George. So good. That should be a segment. I think it's probably becoming one anyway. War, there he is. Oh, the humanity.
I don't know how much longer the crowd is running for their lives. I think they're going to step inside. I can't stay out here and watch this anymore.
Can't go in there either. Some of the best television ever. And, of course, we can't forget Arlo Guthrie's classic Alice's Restaurant. The whole, 17, 18 minutes of that with circles and arrows and a paragraph, et cetera. So anyway, yeah, good Thanksgiving traditions down here for us goofy broadcast types. So let's go ahead and get into the meat of the show. Gordon has some short shots for us. So, Mr. West, it is all yours, my friend.
Well, we are ready for Thanksgiving. And, Brian, if you'll go ahead and roll the shorts. And I'm very happy to report that the weather out here today and tomorrow, Thanksgiving, is going to permit our annual ham radio on the sand. And this is quite an event. Now, we go down to the beach. We look in both directions, make sure we don't see anybody else on the beach where it's supposed to be about 59 degrees at the highest point tomorrow. We're supposed to have some sun and maybe even a little bit of smog, but the white sand is waiting for our operation on the 10-meter band. Now, Chip and Janet Margelia are the ones that set this up, and we bring a wagon with all sorts of stuff. And as you can see, we're getting ready, and we're going to be on the air shortly. Chip has prefabbed his 10-meter homebrew beam, and it is ready. Now, notice the turkey pot in the background. But anyway, the beam, we've got all the elements all ready to roll, and they slide right into place. And we get that antenna up about 15 feet. But before we attach the ballon and shorting stub, and we check SWR right at 28,400, we're going to operate about 28,400 and a little higher, maybe 405, 28,410, upper sideband 10 meters. Good for techs and above all day tomorrow. All right, he does the final calculations. We look good. And the same beam will go up on a mast. And with that seawater in the background, we are going to have a great signal. So we push the mast into the California sand. The wind is supposed to be about 25 knots, but nonetheless, we'll try. He makes a short check. And last year, we ended up all the way across the country on our very first radio check. And notice that we're totally portable. That is sun power that you see in the foreground. That little solar panel does about an amp, and that'll be enough. We're going to the lithium iron batteries by Shore, and we're hoping that they're going to hold up fine. We're going to take the old Gordo radio box, and it's poised. That Shore 24-amp-hour battery's on the inside. And right now, it's getting a good charge. Now, as the radio's getting warmed up, we are getting warmed up. I wonder what's in that black canister. Well, we'll open it up in just a few, but first we pour the oil, and our turkey goes into the hot oil. We're always very careful that it doesn't boil over. We give the turkey the last rites and put on the last bits of whatever we're going to put on it. And then we make sure we stick our finger, never stick our finger in the hot oil. But it's bubbling, so it's going to be hot. Yep, it looks hot. So the turkey's ready to roll, and there it goes very slowly into the oil. And that's Janet always precisely checking cooking time. And when the turkey's in, then we can sit back and relax and work a little DX. And on 10 meters last year, we worked Japan, we worked South America, we worked all of the USA, and we hope that you'll be out there. Now, before it gets too cold, I like to take on a little bit of waves, and hopefully the waves will be fairly large for a good boogie board ride tomorrow. We have El Nino out here, so the water's nice and warm. And that wave's about ready to close out on me. And anyway, on shore, Chip is already making contacts, and that's what you're going to contact us on tomorrow, 28405, or just above the calling frequency. It is an Armstrong rotator, and uh-oh, here comes the gendarmes to figure out what we are doing. Well, it turned out that the two hams that were in this vehicle were indeed lifeguard hams as well, and they were admiring all the radio stuff, and Chip says, we got away with another one. I don't know if there's a law against operating on the beach, but nonetheless, we were rolling, and this year we will be doing the same thing, totally portable, looking for contacts all over the globe. And Chip is checking the log. And the checking the oil, and you can see the turkeys in there. And we're going to make plenty of contacts in the hour or so that the turkey is boiling. Time to eat before we do more operating. Here's our whole team getting that early bite. And let me tell you, a turkey on the cold beach is indeed the way to go. takes us about an hour and a half to do this whole setup. So Chip and Janet, K7JA, KL7MF, every year host this little get-together of ham radio operators. And we're going to have a bunch coming up here. And after we finish scarfing down the turkey, we're back on the air again. And away we go. So listen up tomorrow, because you're going to see a bunch of us winding down out in the hopefully warm sand. And we hope to work you on the 10-meter band as the seagulls are finishing up on any last turkey scraps. We get the fire going, because when the sun sets, it's going to be cold mama tomorrow night. But we're going to try and stay open until the band closes down on 10 meters. So if you get a chance, tune us in tomorrow down at the beach. We'll be Turkey Beach Portable, 28405, and we're looking for Ham Nation viewers to work us. We'll keep an accurate log on everyone we work. Everyone, have a great Thursday, Turkey Day, from Gordo and the gang. 73, Don, back to you.
Hey, good stuff. I'm going to try to get you guys. I got you guys, what, a couple of years ago, I guess it was on 10, when yep, Katie yep. Allen, when Katie was down there. So that was a lot of fun. I'll try to get you guys down there as well. All right, Gordon, thank you, sir. Gordon showed the Harry's razor, and we're going to talk about Harry's right now, because paying too much for overpriced razors is a problem, and that's something that Harry's is fixing. You know, it's not fun. Sometimes you'll cut yourself, you scrape yourself with dull blades, and they are expensive. You know, you shave every day, you'll spend hundreds of dollars a year just on blades from the name brands, and you know, they always have them locked up behind the plexiglass, and it's a pain. Well, Harry's is fixing all that. High-quality razors, look at that, about half the price of the big blades, and they make their own blades in Germany. They engineer them for sharpness and high performance. I shaved this morning with my Harry's, and I got to tell you, I put a brand-new blade in there, and it's just the best. And they'll ship these blades to you for free right to your front door. Look at them spitting those blades out. That is their own factory in Germany. And because they make and ship their own blades, they're a much more efficient company, which means you get factory-direct pricing. And in each kit, you get a razor with a handle, looks and feels great. There are three razor blades and foaming shave gel in there as well. And the Truman set is an amazing deal. You get it all for just $15. Here is what the Truman looks like in my hand right here. Look at this. This is the Truman. And this is great. You see it has the, that's the travel cover that I have on this, because they have something new that they just came out with. And it's really neat. It's a travel kit. It's a DOP kit, and they've never had this before. And it's nice. It's kind of a denim feeling thing, and like everything else with Harry's, it's very cool and it's very whimsical. The let me show you the liner. Just the liner in here is neat. It's very, very whimsical. It's neat stuff. And of course, in the kit you get your razor, you get your shave cream. This is in the Winston kit, you can get some aftershave lotion in there too if you want, and of course your blades. And there's a place for everything in here. But something else that they have really new is this, and I've been using this too, the daily face wash. It is a peppermint and eucalyptus, and it's got some exfoliant in there, a little bit of grit, not a whole lot, but man, this stuff is great. I got to tell you, it's really cool. But something else they have that's coming out. They have two sets, of course. They have the Winston. And then they have, what's the other one? No, the Truman. The Truman is, and then they have the Winston. And this is the Winston. This is the one that I shaved with this morning. It's got the nice metal handle, the nice chrome handle. But they have the Winter Winston. And look at this. This is the nice metal handle, and it's copper. This is gold. Slick gold as it can be. Yes, it's copper. Very, very nice. And you can also get your initials engraved on the back of it as well. So it's limited time only. I want you to go to harrys.com and check that out. But the regular set, the Truman set, it's an amazing deal. And you get all that for just $15. You get the razor with the handle. You get the three blades and the foaming shave gel for $15. And if you go and get it now, because you are a Ham Nation viewer, you can get $5 off when you enter code HAMNATION at harrys.com. HARRYS.com. Enter the code HAMNATION at checkout. and you'll be a happy camper. It makes a great gift, too. So if you've got someone in your life who shaves, this would be like the perfect gift. So, Harry's, thank you so much for being part of Ham Nation. Time to get into the news, and it occurs to me that we mentioned Les Nessman earlier, and actually, I guess instead of George, I should probably be the Les Nessman character, since I'm known for the news. And something that, I don't know if you ever noticed, but Les Nessman always had a trademark, and that was somewhere on his head was a Band-Aid. Now, I did not cut myself shaving this morning with my Harry's, but because I am Les Nessman, I will put the Band-Aid on my forehead. We also want to talk about some friends of ours, Ray Novak and Carol Perry. If you can pull that picture up, I believe it was in the Dropbox. Brian, if you have it, Ray and Carol were in the RCA, the Radio Club of America Awards, and they were presented some nice honors. If you have that, if you don't, we'll put that somewhere. I'll put it on my Facebook page or something. But they sent me a really, really nice picture, Ray Novak and Carol. And what we'll do is we'll go ahead and get into the news, and that will give Brian a little bit of time to go and retrieve that. And we'll have that when we come back after the news. We got Tamitha with us again, too, tonight. So let's go ahead and check out the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1986, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, November 25th, 2015. The FCC's universal licensing system suffered a second and then third shutdown of its electronic batch filing system. One stoppage occurred on Friday the 13th, and shortly after the system was restored on Wednesday, November 18th, it stopped working again. The ARRL's VEC manager, Maria Soma, AB1FM, said she hoped volunteer examiners and applicants would try to be patient, especially since the FCC has indicated there is not yet a long-term fix for the problem. The agency did acknowledge, however, that the on-again, off-again ability to process files stems from the same issue each time. According to Soma, the ARRL VEC had an estimated 400 applications and nearly 150 exam sessions awaiting FCC processing. A few files did manage to make their way through the system on Wednesday, however, before the system went offline again. The scenario was reminiscent of the shutdown that occurred in early September, frustrating license applicants and examiners, while the FCC website underwent maintenance and a system upgrade. Mark Saturday, December 5th, on your calendar as the 17th annual Skywarn Recognition Day. Bobby Best, WX4ALA, tells us why.
Ham radio operators aren't just fair weather friends to local offices of the National Weather Service. They're integral parts of the wireless communication channel that passes along critical information, often during the most severe weather. That's why on Skywarn Recognition Day, when those hams set up operation at National Weather Service offices around the country, they'll look forward to making contact with other hams nationwide on the HF band in various modes, and also on 2-meter and 440 repeaters. The stations will exchange call signs, signal reports, location, and of course, indicate if it's rainy, cloudy, snowing, hailing, or perhaps even sunny. The National Weather Service and the ARRL created Skywarn Recognition Day in 1999. It's going to be a big day for amateurs everywhere who reach out, make contacts, and yes, even say thank you. And it'll be an even bigger day for the nearly 300,000 trained severe weather spotters on the receiving end. After all, December 5th will be their day to shine like the sun itself.
The South Jersey Radio Association, K2AA, incorporated in June of 1916, and the club is marking the milestone of its continuous operation with hats, T-shirts, coffee mugs, certificates, and a centennial membership, open to any radio amateur who'd like to be a part of the celebration.
Richard Von Lintig, KV2R, a member of the board of directors for the South Jersey Radio Association, says the idea is to give amateurs across the spectrum a chance to join in the club celebration. He says those who sign up to join the club for its anniversary year also will get a chance to show off their special affiliation on the air.
They can participate by signing their call sign as /100, which is a slight modification to their call sign, but because they are centennial members, we are allowing that to be done.
He says the club still is waiting FCC approval of that modification. Also, Von Lintig says there's a special bonus for those working centennial members in various contests.
But when they contact the Centennial members as well as the regular members, they'll get special considerations and they'll be eligible for these certificates that we'll be awarding. Basically, the idea is to have these people participate as members to increase the popularity and the fun of the contest.
For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mark Abramovich, NT3V, just across the Delaware River from South Jersey here in Philadelphia.
Thanks, Mark. To find out more, go to www.sjra.org. Also celebrating a centennial soon, the United States National Park Service and Amateur Radio is helping to celebrate. While Yellowstone, Mount Rushmore, and the Great Smoky Mountains spring immediately to mind, there's a lot more diversity than you might realize. During World War II, the kind of activations that took place inside government facilities in Hanford, Washington, Los Alamos, New Mexico, and Oak Ridge, Tennessee were of the scientific sort. Top secret components of the Manhattan Project, which developed America's first atomic weapon. Those sites are about to be activated again, this time for amateur radio. The U.S. Departments of Energy and the Interior have declared the locations National Historical Sites, making them eligible for next year's National Parks on the Air event, marking the National Park Service's 100th anniversary. But the agency's caution: these sites are not just another place to set up your rig and antenna. They're considered sensitive locations and are being treated as such. So when the event kicks off next year, it's likely the kind of radio activity this time around won't have the same mission as that during the Second World War. But it's bound to create a powerful reaction nonetheless, this time on the HF bands. More information can be found at ARRL.org/NPOTA. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for over 37 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Bobby Best, WX4ALA, Mark Abramovich, NT3V, and Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And now, here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
We have two solar storms that are on their way to Earth and could give us a good chance for aurora this week. One of those storms was slingshotted up from the south in a beautiful display. Those stories and more in the news this week. Despite the sun's activity being pretty flare quiet this week, we have managed to launch two solar storms that have been in the Earth strike zone. The first one launched on the 22nd. It's this filament. You can see it here. And it released a little bit in the south, and it kind of slingshotted its way up to the north in a beautiful display. That one should be hitting us here in the next day or so. And then that opened up this little mini coronal hole. And as you can see, as that rotates in, there's another filament that lets go. That one is also now launched and has been on its way towards Earth. It could graze us here right around the 29th. Switching to our M-flare threat meter, you can see we've been extremely flare quiet over the past week or so. We've stayed well below the seafloor. Around the 21st, though, we did start picking up a little bit with region 2454 and 2457. They started showing some signs of life, but we've managed to stay below the M-flare threat level, and things are now beginning to quiet back down. So you amateur radio operators should be pretty happy. It doesn't look like we have anything like a radio blackout anywhere in our future. Switching to your solar storm conditions, you can see the last time we had any activity at all was back on the 19th, and we only had it for a few hours. Since then, things have kind of quieted down and continued to quiet down to the point where now we're having a hard time even seeing anything other than electronic noise on some of our magnetometers on the ground. So this is horrible news for you poor aurora folk, because you guys have not been able to see aurora even at high latitude places. But that should change here in the next day or so. When we get these solar storms hitting, it should bump up our activity. So expect a little bit more noise on the bands and expect some good chances for aurora. Focusing in on the first of the two solar storms that are headed our way, this is ENLIL. It's our prediction model. This is NASA's version of the model. We're looking down at the north pole of the sun, and here's Earth over here. You can see that solar storm coming out, and it looks like it's going to go pretty much east of us, but it will give us a grazing passage. It looks like right about early on the 26th. It's also embedded in some fast solar wind, which hopefully will compress it and give it a little bit more of a kick, and we'll have some decent aurora chances starting around the 26th. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are anticipating that solar storm that's going to hit us hopefully on the 26th. So NOAA is giving us about a 40% chance of a major storm at high latitudes. At mid latitudes, we're only expecting about a 10% chance of a minor storm with unsettled conditions, and this may be a little bit of an underestimation. We're hoping for a little bit more than that. After that, things should settle down a little bit, but then again on the 29th, we do have that other solar storm that has a chance of grazing us, so we might see activity pick up yet again. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, since region 2454 has now rotated off of the west limb, the only thing we've got left is region 2457, and it's not showing many signs of life. So NOAA's only giving us about a 10 to 15% chance of an M-class flare over the next 3 days, and that risk will probably continue to diminish over the coming week as these new regions that are rotating into Earth view really don't look like they're going to be M-class players at all. So you amateur radio operators should like that. We do still have enough solar flux so that the band propagation should remain good through the week, despite the fact we have no M-flare players on the disk. So despite the incredibly quiet conditions right now, it really is the quiet before the storm. We have two solar storms that have been launched in the Earth strike zone. One should hit Earth right around the 26th. The second one should hit Earth right around the 29th, which will give you aurora photographers a lot to be thankful for over this holiday weekend if you happen to be in America. And you amateur radio operators and GPS operators, it might be a little bit of a bumpy ride here through this holiday weekend. It's probably not going to be that big a deal because these storms really aren't that strong, but after this is over, then things will quiet back down and you'll be in the clear. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
All right. Good stuff. Thanks, Dr. T. We appreciate you. Now let's pull that picture up of Ray Novak and Carol Perry. They were at the Radio Club of America stuff. So that's awesome. Look at those two. Such a lovely couple. Of course, Ray, Mr. ICOM, and Carol Perry does so much with the youth and ham radio and schools and everything. And they were both honored by the RCA and both very, very deserving. So congratulations to those guys. We do appreciate all that you guys do for ham radio. All right, let's talk about another one of our sponsors, and that is PillPack. Taking medicine, I don't care if you're just taking vitamins or if you're taking a whole bunch of prescription stuff, it's confusing. What do I take when? I can't get the bottle open, the jar open, whatever. Got to go to the pharmacy because I'm out. It's just a hassle, and PillPack takes care of all those problems through better packaging, personalized service, and modern technology. And they make every aspect of managing your meds very simple and very convenient. They pre-sort your scripts and your vitamins in easy-to-tear packets. They're labeled with the date and time for each dose. No more organizing multiple medications each month and sorting them into a Monday through Sunday pill box. I hate those things. Everything you need to know is right on each very convenient pill pack. And they will proactively call your doctor for you, manage all your refills so you never run out, and instead of realizing you're out of meds at the last minute trying to chase down your doctor. It's all taken care of. They deliver your meds directly to you for free. Their pharmacists are available 24/7 from the privacy of your own home. They use robots and digital imaging technology along with pharmacist oversight to ensure the accuracy of every pill pack. And you get all this at no extra cost beyond your standard copay for medications. And shipping is always free. And most insurance plans are compatible with that, including Medicare Part D if you have that. Switching is easy. Can take about 5 minutes on their secure site. They take care of everything. PillPack is one of Time's 25 top inventions of 2014. Got a great review in PC Magazine. There's a medication reminder as well for your iPhone and your Apple Watch. Here, come back to me, Brian, because here it is. This is what it looks like right here. This sits on your counter instead of, 47 million bottles or, those other things. And you just literally, let me show you how easy this is. You take this out and that's off. Now, these are vitamins, you can see. Here, right here on the front, it's, what is this? Cranberry, vitamin C, and vitamin D. And it's all right there on the front. There we go, on the front. And, of course, you can see through it. And I don't know if you can see this or not, but there's like a serrated edge right here. And it's a smooth edge over here. So if you try to tear this edge, you're not going anywhere. But if you try to tear this edge, it comes right open. And then they just pop right out, pop in there. And it's as easy as that. You're done. That's it. PillPack. You got to check this out. If you take any kind of medicines or anything, go to pillpack.com/twit, sign up. And when you use our link and transfer your prescriptions to PillPack, you'll get a credit for $20 worth of vitamins and over-the-counter stuff. Pillpack.com/TWIT. That spells twit. You know that because you're smart and you're a Ham Nation viewer. PillPack, thanks a lot for being on the team here at Ham Nation. Let's switch up to George, a couple of hours to my north. and see what's going on tonight with in George World. Do we have smoke and solder, or is it war stories from the broadcast trenches, or do we have both?
Don, it's such a special holiday. We've got both tonight.
Woohoo!
In the war stories category, you remember I left a little early last week. I told you about the power failure I had the night before as the thunderstorm was approaching and me getting out to the transmitter site. And, you know, all the best transmitter site locations seem to be out in the woods somewhere or in a cow pasture or somewhere there's a tall hill.
You should see the ones down here, George. You've got to take a boat to some of them.
I've got one like that, too. Yep, I sure do. But that isn't the one that gave me the trouble, not the one in the swamp this time. It was the one in the hills, and, you know, you pull off the paved road, you go through a gap, and then you've got, you know, like a half a mile through the woods and steep hills and everything. Well, you know, a tree had fallen across the road, so I had to hike in there because the electricity had gone off, the generator cranked, but the transmitters didn't, wouldn't come back on by remote. So I hiked in, got in there just before the thunderstorm hit, hiked back out. That was Tuesday night. The utility company came out sometime on Wednesday and took their big truck down through there and got things going again. But they never called me and told me that it was back on like they said they would, which, you know, can happen. But anyway, so we'd been on the generator over 24 hours when I was on Ham Nation last week, and I was thinking, you know, I need to get on off of it because I don't really know how much fuel I have out there. And the generator's been running over a day now, so I'm just going to, when I get through on a Ham Nation, you know, it was like 8:30, I'm just going to leave, go out to the transmitter site. I know the utility crew is in there, so they cut the tree out of the way, and I'll be able to drive right on in and figure out why the generator didn't shut off and go back to utilities, and I should be back home before midnight. Well,
yeah,
that didn't work out like planned either.
No.
I got out there. The tree had been cut, so I drove on through. They left the gate open, so nope, I didn't even have to stop and unlock it. It's some real steep hills out there, and, you know, this is in the middle of nowhere. It was really dark, and you really can't see down there until you start down the hill. And I got about, a quarter of the way down the first one, and I noticed the huge ruts that the utility truck had cut through there. Big dually, you know, cherry picker truck, probably. I didn't see it. But anyway, I had to decide then, okay, I've either got to try to barrel on through this and then make it up the super steep hill on the other side, or I better stop right here and try to back out while I can. So I stopped and tried to back out, and I could get partway up the hill, but I couldn't get all the way back out. So I got stuck after Ham Nation last week.
Lord.
In the middle of nowhere out in the woods. So I called a guy I work with. He came out in a truck. I told him to bring a tape measure with him, so he did, and we measured it. I was 70 feet down the side of the hill there, so we went to Walmart and bought enough toe straps that we could tie them together and have enough to reach down there. Hooked it up, pulled me right out, like no problems whatsoever, but by then it was about 12:30 in the morning, and I said, well, I'm not going to hike on in there again tonight. So I hiked in the next day and took care of, you know, what the problem was. So anyway, it was a transmitter site hacking or hiking week last week.
Oh, wow.
I've got a question. How much stretch was there in 70 feet of toe strap? Because I would imagine you got nylon toe strap. It was probably about 15 or 20 foot of stretch in there, wasn't it?
It was kind of dark. I don't know. I don't think it stretched. I think it did really amazingly well. And, you know, the stuff's only, you can get like 30 feet for $20, so it wasn't super expensive.
Yeah.
So anyway, next time I've got 90 feet of toe strap ready to go, but I hope there won't be a next time.
And anyway,
I've contacted the owners of the site, and supposedly they're going to get out there and fix a road because, I didn't make it out to the next day, you know, because of getting stuck that night. So the generator ran like 44 hours, and I've got like 30% left in a 1,000-gallon butane tank. So I've got to get a butane truck in there as quick as I can, or we're gonna have some issues the next time there's an extended power failure.
Wow.
Anyway, that's war stories from the transmitter site this week. We do have a little smoke and solder, though. In the middle of all that, well, not in the middle of it, actually over the weekend, I found some time to get back with my little Raspberry Pi project I was working on, running Windows 10 on the Raspberry Pi. And I created a little project that, I just wanted to find something useful to do with it. So let's take a look at that.
You may recall recently I mentioned Windows 10 IoT Core running on the Raspberry Pi 2. I showed a little bit about Windows 10 on the Raspberry Pi and what it is and what it isn't in the last episode of Amateur Logic. Today we're going to look at a little project I wrote just as an experiment to see if I could find something useful to do with it. You can run universal Windows programs on the Raspberry Pi 2, and to create those programs, you need to use Microsoft's VisualStudio.NET 2015. And since I was a .NET developer, I thought this would be pretty easy to pull off. Well, it was a little more difficult than I thought, but I did get a program running here. This is a simple little ID timer. Now, I'm not prepared to teach you how to use VisualStudio.NET here today, but you can use a community edition of it, which you can download for free from Microsoft. And there's a lot of resources on the internet, so if you really want to learn how to use it, you can. I built a little circuit here to go along with the program so that it can key a rig to push to talk, and so that we could also run it without having a monitor and a mouse. I've got my components laid out here on a little piece of solderless breadboard. I've got a read relay that's 5 volts. I've got a 2N2222 transistor right here that actually is turning the relay on and off. On the contacts of the relay, I've got a LED and a resistor installed just so that we can see that the contacts are made. Normally, this would go to the push-to-talk circuit on a transceiver. I didn't have a 1.2K ohm resistor, so I used a 1,000 ohm and a 300 ohm, and that worked just fine. Over on this side, I've got 2 push buttons hooked up, and I've got a 10K ohm resistor pulled up to 3.3 volts here, just to normally hold these 2 inputs at 3.3 volts. When we press the push button, it simply takes that input to ground. Over on the Pi, the red wire here is 3.3 volts. The blue wire here is 5 volts. It only goes to the relay. The violet and the white wire are GPIO pins 5 and 6. And the green wire over here is GPIO pin 12. And right here on pin 39 is ground. Let's run our little program now. We'll log in to our Raspberry Pi, and we'll go to the app screen, select the ID timer app, and click start. We can look at the Raspberry Pi now, and we see that the program has loaded. It's counting down from 30 seconds. Normally, you would have set this for maybe 10 minutes. I just did 30 seconds here so we could get through the demo. There's 3 buttons here on the screen. Play will play the ID immediately. Reset will reset the timer. And exit gives us a way to quit the program. Now, it'll count down for the complete duration here, and then it will key the relay and play the ID.
This is W5JDX.
Once the ID has played, the relay releases and the timing period starts all over again. You could use this to key a rig and do an ID, or you could just have it play a beep through a speaker or light an LED or whatever you'd like. We've got a monitor, keyboard, and mouse connected to this Pi. Once the program started, though, it'll take care of itself, but we do have the options to play or reset or exit the program.
This is W5JDX.
I may not always want to have a monitor, keyboard, and mouse connected to the Pi, so I do have the options with the 2 push buttons that I added here to play or reset. If I push the button that's connected to GPIO pin 5,
This is W5JDX.
We can see that it keyed the relay because the LED came on and it played the ID. If we press the button that's connected to GPIO pin 12, it resets our timer. So we've got a choice. We can operate this either with the mouse and a computer screen, or we've just got two push buttons that we can use. So that's it. A simple little Raspberry Pi project that works with Microsoft's Windows 10 IoT Core. And it worked. It's sitting right here behind me now. That's just a little experimental project. It's not something that I actually planned to use, but I did want to come up with something that would be easy to do with it. And it was a little more work than I had expected. Windows 10 IoT Core on the Raspberry Pi. Yeah, it's not raspy, and it's not going to replace the Linux that you'd run on the Raspberry Pi. And it's not going to replace your Windows desktop computer either. It's almost like an Arduino on steroids, but if you know how to use VisualStudio.net to write programs, then you can write them for the Raspberry Pi that'll run sort of like an embedded device, I guess, at this point. You know, there's going to be more updates coming to it, but it does give you quite a few capabilities that you would not have with an Arduino or similar microcontroller. Because you've got video and audio and Ethernet, you know, and all of that on the Raspberry Pi. So, yeah, I can see it's going to be useful for some things, but, you know, I'm still going to keep an SD card around with Raspbian on it because, that's probably more of what the Raspberry Pi is going to be used for. Anyway, last week I asked a question, and that was, what is the best electrical conductor? And I'm just going to ask Don this right now, just to see what Don thinks is the best electrical conductor.
I would say gold.
You would say gold. And, you know, a number of the people who answered that question did say gold. However, they were wrong, too.
All right. It's can not. I have a second guess?
You've got a second.
Silver.
And you're correct. Silver is the best electrical conductor. And you'll see it used a lot in transmitters and RF circuits and such. Gold, you know, we see it on connectors a lot. And it's a good conductor. But the reason we see it on connectors and switch contacts and sockets and all is because gold doesn't corrode.
Right.
So, you know, it's cleaner. However, copper is actually a better conductor than gold. I didn't really realize that, but it's silver is the best, and then the next best is copper. And then I believe it is where gold comes in. Anyway, I had a winner there. You know, a lot of people said gold. I would say almost half of them said gold. And that's probably what you would think unless you actually took the time to look it up. But Mike Murphy knew what it was. KI8R said it's silver. So congratulations, Mike. We're going to send you this DX Engineering DXE-GBWM. And what this is a copper ground bus wall mount you can use for your station grounding. It can be mounted on a wall or bottom of your tower, wherever you want to put it. It's got a lot of holes drilled in it. Comes with a couple of copper, I guess you'd call these cable clamps here, where you can hook in ground wires, a couple of eye terminals on the other end here, and holes drilled for putting in those surge suppressors that DX Engineering sells. And, you know, a few different companies make those. Or you can screw, you know, your copper straps or braids or whatever you want for your ground system. This makes a really convenient place to tie all your grounds together because you don't want grounds going everywhere. They all need to be going to one common ground. And I know there's a lot of controversy on grounding around there. But I think everyone will agree that you don't want a lot of different grounds. You want to try to run it all together, and this makes a great way to do that.
the DX Engineering DXE GBWM copper ground bus wall mount. It's not soft copper. It's some type of copper alloy. It's super strong. So a great little deal there we're going to send out to Mike. Congratulations. For next week, Don, I was listening to you earlier, and
why?
I thought, I don't know why. I guess because the speaker was on in here.
Okay.
But we're not really sure about that. But anyway.
No one is.
You got me enthused about Harry's.
Yeah.
And I just happen to have a Harry's kit here. This is a Harry shave set. I don't know which one this
is. The winter one. That's the nice winter one with the copper handle.
Yep. Nice gift box there.
Really nice.
It's the whole set, the shaving cream, the handle, the cover, some spare blades there, the kit to put it in.
It's nice, isn't it?
Some of the daily face wash.
Love that stuff.
I've got the aftershave lotion.
Yep. All good stuff.
We're going to put that together for a special prize here.
And are you going to hurry up somebody? You're going to hurry up somebody, aren't you?
I'm going to hurry up somebody, yes.
All right.
And I have the perfect question to give this away with. And this is one of those where there's really no wrong answer. I just want your opinions. And, you know, well, some guys may not get anything anyway, so this could be a good Christmas gift for someone. But but here's the question. What should Santa Claus bring you for Christmas this year?
Ooh.
And, you know, there could be some people in the audience who haven't been nice, and Santa Claus may not come to see them. But anyway, somebody's going to get a chance to win this Harry set here. So hamnationcontest@gmail.com. Tell me what Santa Claus ought to bring you for Christmas this year, and you could win the Harry shave set there. Well, we'll be back in a moment with Dale and some more action-packed Ham Nation videos, but first let's have a message from ICOM.
Over the hills and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. For those long holiday trips, let your ICOM radio help you enjoy your travels. Take ICOM's IC7100 D-Star radio with you this season. This radio offers an angled control head and touchscreen for easy mobile operation, a large internal speaker for clear digital audio, and it's perfect for multi-band and all-mode communications. Interested in easy hands-free operation while you hit the road? ICOM's analog IC2730A mobile and the digital ID5100A both feature optional Bluetooth capability, a large backlit screen for high contrast viewing, and 50 watts output power on both VHF and UHF. For entry-level D-Star operation, check out the ID880H. Features include VHF-UHF dual-band functionality, one band at a time, good menu structure and easy programming, and fast multiple scanning for maximum reception. Looking for a compact, rugged, and user-friendly radio on 2 meters? The IC2300H has a large, bright alphanumeric display with 3 backlight options, oversized tuning dial for easy operation while on road, and 65 watts of stable output power. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's mobile radio selection.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation and register to win for some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats and posters. You know, ICOM puts together a special little prize package that someone wins every week. But while you're there, you can also learn how you could win the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And for November, the radio is going to be the ICOM ID5100A. Innovative 2-meter, 70-centimeter transceiver. It's got touchscreen, internal GPS, D-Star, dual band, dual watch, analog, and DV automatic repeater list up. Optional Bluetooth unit for wireless headsets and Android apps, and a lot more. It's probably the nicest mobile rig that's out there anywhere. A great rig there. And you could possibly win it. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. So sign up, Good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And now let's bring in one of the guys out of my picture here, I think. No, it's not the turkey, or is it?
Okay. Yeah, it's a turkey, okay. It's supposed to be a pilgrim, but you know how it goes. It's Thanksgiving Eve here on Ham Nation, and I thought we had a tradition going for this show, so I dug out the pilgrim hat from last year. It's good to be back. First time in about a month now after we traveled down on the malt shop cruise there the first part of November. So this evening, got a couple of quick videos. We've got a report on the Fox Cities Amateur Radio Club Hamfest up in Wisconsin and a new edition of Show Me Your Shack, complete with an embedded video. So let's head up to Wisconsin now, check out the Hamfest. And with the report, here's Ham Nation Wiki editor, N9LVS, that's Dan.
Welcome to the Foxy's Amateur Radio Club Hamfest, which was held on November 1st, 2015. Well, for the vendors, 6 a.m. comes real early, and there's only 2 hours to get set up. So they start working really fast. Luckily, the donuts and coffee come out rather quickly. Later on in the Hamfest, this changes to Wisconsin bratwurst and soda. Well, the Hamfest started right away at 8 o'clock, and as you can see, we had a line out the door. We had quite a selection of vendors this year. We had Wolf River Coils, as well as the RF adapter guy, not to mention the ARRL. And the ARRL was signing up a lot of new members and renewing members, as well as the Frog. At 9 o'clock, we started our VE testing session, which had a lot of upgrades, as well as new licensed amateur radio operators. This test session is usually a full house, with the line again running out the door. And this year, we had a special guest, Riley Hollingsworth, via Skype, the former FCC Special Counsel for Enforcement, who gave a great presentation on amateur radio and what's going on with the Federal Communications Commission. Andy and 1KSN brought all kinds of kits, including a little robot that worked off a Sony TV remote. There were many unique radios there, including this one, which was found a few years back, wrapped up in a newspaper in an attic, and some unique old radios as well. Each radio having its own little story. There was also some very old test equipment there as well. And some old ham radio equipment as well. And if you needed wire, oh, this was the place to be. And every ham needs a couple of old tubes that you just can't find anymore. There was also some not-so-old ham radio equipment there as well. These radios here are just looking for a new home, including this FT-1000 that was in beautiful shape. And here's a nice older radio that would be great for somebody just starting out. The Kenwood TS-120S was one of my first radios, and there was antennas of all shapes and sizes. And if you were looking for miscellaneous pieces parts, this would be a great find. And let's not forget the raffle, where our grand prize this year was a Yaesu FTM-400DR, amongst many other prizes. This year's Hamfest was very well attended, as we pretty much filled up the parking lot. And that's the Foxy's Amateur Radio Club Hamfest 2015. We hope to see you next year in 7.3s from N9LVS.
Well, thanks for that report, Dan, and thank you so much for helping everyone out with the Ham Nation Wiki. We're going to keep things moving. I changed hats. It's about 9 o'clock, just a little bit after Central Time. And that's time for the championship game at the Maui International Tournament. And in the tournament, the Kansas Jayhawks. So let's go right and roll Show Me Your Shack. Tonight, shack photos from the fall of 2015. Josh Montano, WX7JM, shows us you can work the world with a small shack. He's logged 110 countries, uses an IC7000 for everything from VHF and UHF repeaters to HF nets and DXing, and he owns a Yaesu FT60R handheld transceiver for emergencies. He has an LED sign with his call sign. It's green to represent his favorite color. Norm W7DMU is an avid
portable operator and QRP. This is his most recent check using a buddy pole antenna and an Elcraft KX3 QRP transceiver somewhere on the Oregon coast. Here are two future hams working on their first soldering project. They were at a special event in Joleta, Arizona, sponsored by the Green Valley, Arizona Amateur Radio Club. The project was a simple LED blinking light kit. It was created and designed by longtime club member Lloyd Miller, N7GV. And thanks to Jay, KE5NIZ, for sending the story. Tom K3SSP tells us he operates from a stealth condo shack. The classic HF station includes an ICOM PS30, IC720A, SP3, AT500, and a new IC7000. The Dentron is an MT3000A. His winter project, a Heathkit SP200 linear, should be ready for prime time soon. Eric K4CEB and son Nathan N4CB are second and third generation hams. Eric's father, Larry, K4CEB, was licensed in 1954. He was a big DXer. Eric was licensed in 91. When his father passed away in 2008, Eric adopted his dad's call. Nathan, meanwhile, was licensed in 2014 at the age of 10 and just upgraded to general this year, got his call changed to N4CEB. They run an ICOM 7700, an SPE1 KW rig, an ICOM 746 Pro, and an SP220 Heathkit. Eric's holding on to his dad's Kenwood TS830s and Dentron MLA2500. Well, here's Alex, KD0YTE, in his shack. And here's a closer view of Alex's equipment. ICOM's representative, Will Jourdain, set up an awesome display of the latest ICOM radios at Papa Jack's Trade Day. That was last month in Tupelo, Mississippi. Sponsored by the Tupelo Amateur Radio Club, the Trade Day turned into a mini hamfest. Jerome Sheffield, W7YQ, won the main prize. That was an ID51A handy talkie. Second prize was a $50 gift certificate from DX Engineering. Third prize was a DX Engineering tote bag. Other prizes were donated by MFJ and by Heil Sound. Michael, KI8R, sent us a picture of 88 pounds of aluminum. Here he's putting the finishing touches on his high-gain TH11 at 60 feet. Kent, KC66B, has a great view from his shack. He operates a Flex Signature Series 6500, an ICOM IC7410, and a Kenwood TM-V7. His microphone's a Heil PR781. Kent's antennas include a Cushcraft X9 tribander with X94 add-on for 40 meters, a Radio Waves DX160 off-center-fed dipole, all on a 70-foot tower with M2 rotator. He uses a Green Heron RT21 controller. Well, Sean WD5IWW wanted to narrate his own shack tour. I bet you haven't seen this much equipment in one room ever. Let's watch.
Hello and welcome to the WD5IWWQRZ webpage. I hope you'll take time to take a look around the shack, check out all the pictures. Please sign my QRZ web log on your way out. And remember to promote the hobby. Best 73, good DX.
Thank you.
Sean's got so much equipment there, he had to pan the shack twice to show it all. Now, a couple of blasts from the past. Chip, K9MIT, was first licensed around 1961 as WN9ZTH. He was 11. He's the kid with the short hair all the way on the right. Here's Chip in 73. He was married by then. His call sign was WB9OZX. He said he was a big boy then with those Yaesu FTDX 400 twins. A very nice setup, man. He said he wishes he still had them. He's 64 now, getting ready for Medicare, and says ham radio's been the best hobby ever. He loves it, and he'll continue to support it. Dan, now WA5CYR, built a night kit 10-in-1, an AM transmitter that operated around 1140 kilocycles. Remember those? At 100 microwatts. He could transmit up to 100 feet on a good day with a 50-foot long antenna. Dan listened to it using his first 6-transistor radio. You can see it hanging on the desk. Dan's first shortwave receiver was a Nightkit space spanner. His grandpa Westerman built it for him for a Christmas present and encouraged him to become a shortwave listener. When he heard new countries on the radio, he looked them up on the globe, learned geography extremely well for a seventh grader. He was able to point out countries on the globe his teachers didn't even know about. Dan's first licensed ham radio transmitter was an Amico AC1 transmitter, which he built himself. It was a CW transmitter, ran 15 watts. By changing the coils on top and the crystals, he could work both 80 and 40 meters CW. And with another modification, he also ran 15 meters CW. A year later, he earned his general license, so he added a 2-tube screen modulator built on a short wooden tubophore. And this let him run about 7 or 8 watts of AM in the general band. And finally, Bernie, W7DMC, said it was National Cat Day or something, so he couldn't resist sending this photo. He said, "This is Gordo the cat." And that's it for this issue of Show Me Your Shack. Remember to send your shack photos to Ham Nation Videos at TWIT.TV. Kudos to everyone who submitted photos this time. They all, or almost all, included concise descriptions of the photo and their equipment. And that is a big help. When you do shoot a video for Show Me Your Shack, if you can, do shoot it at 720p. That's 1280 pixels wide by 720 pixels deep. That will work out real well. Keep up the good work, and we'll be looking forward to seeing your shack on Ham Nation sometime soon. When we get enough pictures in, we'll prepare another episode of Show Me Your Shack. Send your photos and the links to your videos in the meantime to Ham Nation Videos at TWIT.TV. Well, Eric N0KOG calls himself the King of Jersey, will be net control this evening on the 40-meter post-show net. He'll be looking for you around 7278 kilohertz, plus or minus. And Amanda's up next with news and questions from the chat room. So let's switch now to our Canyon City, Colorado studio. And good evening, Amanda. Happy Thanksgiving.
Well, happy Thanksgiving to you as well, Dale. And thank you so much for the great videos there. Appreciate it. By the way, I do have one question, or actually probably a reminder. Someone had mentioned in the chat room that December 31st is the last day to send out for the clean sweep for the Ham Nation 200th. Is that true?
That is true, Amanda. When Mike set up the rules basically for the special event for the 200 broadcast, decided that December 31st, the end of the year, would be the time we would cut off sending QSLs out to people. So if you do want to get that clean sweep sticker, make sure you send a QSL card to Steve, W7UDI out in Washington. He was W7H, and he's got the clean sweep stickers, and he'll get them out to you if you earned one. He'll check the database, and everything should work out real well. Amanda, go ahead.
Very good. And if you guys have any more questions about that, be sure to email either Dale or W7UDI. They would be more than happy to answer your questions. If you think you might have gotten one, you're not sure, definitely check with them. Anyhow, moving on, I just wanted to mention, this is the sweetest thing. One of my local Aries groups, the Pikes Peak Aries, which is also known as Region 2, District 2, or R2D2 here in Colorado, are out there tomorrow serving meals up to needful folks in Colorado Springs, Colorado. So you guys, thank you so much for all your hard work. That's really sweet. And we all appreciate it so much. And everyone else, of course, have a great Thanksgiving. Let's move on. George, I have a couple of questions for you. The first one is it necessary to upgrade to an ESD safe soldering station in order to assemble some of the newer SDR kits or Elecraft radios?
I believe it is recommended that you do that, although I haven't. I still, you know, have a soldering iron that doesn't even have a ground lug on the power plug. You know, and I got mixed feelings about all of that. You know, if you don't have a ground lug there on the power cable, then the tip of your iron is probably floating, and if you accidentally hit something hot with it, maybe it won't blow up. But if it's grounded, you know, I've always wondered about that. I don't have one, though, so I can't measure that. But, yeah, I think it's recommended you do use an ESD-safe soldering station, but I don't myself.
Okay, so this is like saying, yes, you should wear a helmet, but I don't actually do that myself. Okay, got it, George. Thank you so much. Yep. Actually, I have another question for you. Where is a good place to find a simple transmitter to build that does not use a crystal and also can be homebrewed? Looking to build and operate QRP. Any help would be appreciated.
Oh, gee, there's probably lots of things out there. Homebrew, it depends on your definition of homebrew. If in the strictest sense, that means you're just going to pull stuff together and build it from your own design. Well, you know, that's maybe a little more challenging. Most of those type of things would be crystal controlled. But today there's a lot of kits like the Soft Rocks. I can't remember the name of the website right now, but do a search for Soft Rock Radio and you'll come up with that. It's a little software-defined QRP kit that is frequency agile. It's got a frequency synthesizer on it, so you can tune it wherever you want it. There's a number of other kits out there, too, sort of like that. So I hesitate to recommend any one in particular other than, you know, I've built several of the Soft Rocks. They're pretty nice, but it is surface mount components on that. So there's probably easier stuff around, but if you're not scared of surface mount, you can really do a lot with those Soft Rocks.
Very good. Thank you so much. And Don.
K0NEB, Joe Eisenberg, the kit guy from CQ Magazine. Look him up on QRZ and send him an email asking him, because he is the go-to guy for kits and QRP stuff, I think. So check out K0NEB on QRZ.com and send him an email. He'll tell you exactly where to go for that stuff.
Very good. Thank you. Hey, what's this? Hi. Jeff has one too.
You're a Harry's girl. My wife's a Harry's girl too. See, it's not just for guys.
Oh, wait. It's down. Okay. Never mind.
Manly, yes, but ladies like it too.
Jeff got one too. Yeah, I bought him one. I said, oh, you got to try this. It's cheap enough. It's got to be better than paying $16 every 2 weeks for those stupid razors. Anyhow, yes, Jeff has one. Actually, he has two. He has one at work as well. So, anyhow, I had some other stuff. George, gosh, you're popular tonight. I wanted to talk to you about, yes, transmitter sites. Here in Colorado, we have some rough times. And a lot of times we can't get to several of our repeater sites after October. Now, I wish I had them on here. I wish I had a video or something. But two of my ham friends had to go up to a transmitter site in the middle of December a few years ago. Anyhow, they managed to roll a snowcat. So don't feel so bad about getting stuck and having to be towed. I mean, it could have been worse.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping I can come up with, well, I actually have a four-wheel drive Explorer, but it doesn't have the clearance to get through the ruts that have been cut in the road now. But yeah, in my case, you know, it's not a repeater site. It's a commercial station. So, if I have to walk, I have to walk. It's got to stay on the air. Don knows how that is.
Yep.
Absolutely. And a lot of our ham sites here with our repeaters are at commercial transmitter sites. So sometimes they work it out where they say, okay, somebody is sacrificing their life to go up there. Who else needs work? So they all work it out wherever one person can go up there and work on a lot of things at the same time. It kind of works out that way. You just have to do it. It's a community thing. There's wireless internet, stuff like that. Someone usually needs just a reset, something simple, but we try to help everyone out and they help us out as well. So it's kind of nice, but it also sucks to have to go up to 12,000 feet, 20 degrees, and 50-mile-an-hour winds. Anyhow, that's all I've got, you guys. It's been a great show. Oh, Don, one more thing, a suggestion. If Dr. Scove could maybe do a segment on explaining what the K-index is, the solar wind, how all of that works together, because we love hearing her reports on it, but sometimes we don't understand what all of the terminology is. What do you think?
Yeah, good idea. I am going to write that down and suggest that to her. K-index and solar winds for Dr. T. We'll see what we can do about that.
Awesome. Hey, you guys, Amanda, this has been great. Yes.
You might have the people look on hamnationvideos.info. One of the videos that Dan N9LVS did following Dayton, he had a condensed version of her presentation to the antenna forum. And I believe on that 10-minute presentation, she was explaining a lot of that stuff. It was a very good video that Dan submitted then. Go ahead.
Oh, very good. That's great info. Thank you so much. And you know they love watching her, so they would love to hear the explanation right from her. Appreciate that, Dale. You guys, hey, happy Thanksgiving, everyone. We will see you next week. Over to you, Don.
Thank you. We appreciate you being here tonight. We've ran long, as usual, so we need to wrap this up and get out of here so that Brian can go home and see what his, I'm sure his new wife has some honeydews for him for Thanksgiving. So 7278 is the 40-meter net. I think 20 meters is probably so we won't have to worry about that. We've got Echolink. 355-800 is the star dewdrop-in star where the Santa net will be on Christmas Eve. That's the Echolink net. And also on D-Star is reflector 14C for the post-show net. So I think that should just about cover everything. George, did I leave anything out? I think that's about it, huh?
I think that's about it. But Gordo did say he's going to be somewhere around 72, 78.
Yeah.
So if you look around there, you might run up on Gordo getting ready for the big Thanksgiving festivities tomorrow.
And, of course, he'll be on 10.
N2KOJ is going to be running the net tonight on 40, and he's going to shoot 472, 78 there.
Yeah, I saw in the chat room that he's having amplifier issues, so it's kind of hard to hear him, I think. But don't forget, tomorrow, 10 meters, 28405 thereabouts, listen for Gordon on 10 for his annual Thanksgiving from the beach. That's always a lot of fun with Chip and Janet. So, guys, we're going to get out of here and let the Twit folks go home and enjoy their Thanksgiving. We thank you so much for being with us. We're very thankful that you've let us go 225 shows. Wow. Who'd have thought?
Woohoo.
Bob, of course. watching. And he and his lovely wife, Sarah, are going to have a great Thanksgiving tomorrow, I'm sure. So we love all of you, and thank you so much for supporting what we all do here for Ham Radio. And thanks to the folks at TWIT for letting us do it. So 7-3 from South Mississippi, and we'll see you guys next time. Happy Thanksgiving from all of us here at Ham Nation. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Happy Thanksgiving.